Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I guess it comes down to the human factor, I guess, because what happened after our financial crisis is that I feel like the community came together a little bit. And even if now we can't really be close to each other, I think our world is getting much, much smaller in a way because, you know, we are sort of into this together.
All right. Good All afternoon. Right. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Where are you?
Well, I am in Reykjavik, Iceland. Still snowing here. We're just waiting for the spring to arrive. It doesn't arrive.
All right. But as the summer won't come, you'll just skip over that and just like a continuous windy, rainy season will keep going. So you're tough over there with the weather.
True. Yeah. And I guess, I mean, I always said that the weather here defines us as people. And I guess in, you know, in this time, very weird time that we are actually experiencing now, you know, it's very tangible how flexible and adaptable the Icelandic nation is, I guess.
Well, what's that expression? I can't say it, but there's an expression in Icelandic that's basically like go with the flow. That is kind of the mantra over there.
Oh yeah, it's þetta rettast, which means it will all sort out somehow. It will, you know, be solved.
Will pass.
Yeah, exactly. Just kind of, and that's a little bit like with the weather here. You know, it will pass. You know.
Yeah. So we kind of just jumped into chit chat, but I guess we should introduce you a little bit. I know you. You know, from your business with Pink Iceland for many years. I remember when you started it, I feel like it was probably around 2011 in that neighborhood there. And yes. I've always been a big fan of you. I've always kind of followed a few Icelandic businesses because I've just always been interested in it. And you popped up like quite easily in my path as a wedding photographer. So I've known you for a few years. But before you were doing Pink Iceland, you have quite a bit of experience in tourism in general. So maybe like, take us through how you kind of led up to starting Pink Iceland.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I started at young age to work with tourists, really, and to be a host, if you may say. I used to be a warden in the highlands of Iceland for 3 summers, which was, you know, people thought of it as something that girls could not do. And I was very, very, you know, passionate about making them wrong, basically. So I applied for it and ended up being with my ex-girlfriend at the time, you know, the warden of Hveravelli, which is the middle of nowhere in Iceland, basically between 2 glaciers. It's a hot spring area. And I guess those 3 summers taught me a lot. It's probably the best school I've been to, just to kind of be independent and just figure things out. And from that day, I think I like the first day I was there, I just felt something really, really inspiring of like welcoming people to my country. I was raised up in Italy, actually, so I didn't spend my youth in Iceland, you know, just the first years. And so Iceland for me was always my paradise, so to speak. And I always wanted to come back. And so I did when I was 16 and pretty much been here since, you know, with some exceptions of a few months somewhere else.
So were you doing that, like working in tourism around 2008 when Iceland kind of well, the rest of the world too, but especially Iceland kind of imploded with, financial crisis.
Yes. I was a marketing manager for a whale watching company at the time. And we've tourism in Iceland has gone through a lot of stuff, basically. And we had the bank crisis, and we had the volcano erupting, Eyjafjallajökull, as well in 2010. So we've had a lot of events that actually formed us a little bit and taught us a lot. So this is our new challenge now, I guess, with this weather pandemic.
Yeah, like that's actually kind of another reason I wanted to speak with you. And so without jumping around too much, like we're recording this mid-March 2020, so amidst the apocalypse, and you've kind of been through, not a health apocalypse, but a financial apocalypse. So,
yes.
I mean, it's pretty tricky to compare them, directly, but what are you kind of like thinking back to what you went through in 2008 that you're kind of like drawing a little bit of hope from right now in terms of, running your own business now?
I guess it comes down to the human factor, because what happened after our financial crisis is that I feel like the community came together a little bit. And even if now we can't really be close to each other, I think our world is getting much, much smaller in a way because, we are sort of into this together. And I think something happened, similarly happened, in the financial crisis is that our community came together and you saw people going a little bit back to basic, if you may say, meaning that they thought about what is most important in life for them and all of those things. Also, we saw a lot of music and design and, a lot of creativity in the society, which I think, starts when you really need it, when you don't have, the wheels of economy, just running, you have to do something about it. And that's when creativity comes. And I mean, in my mind, travel is actually an act of creativity. Somebody said it, some wise person said it, I think. I'm just beating it up. But I think it's true because, we try to be creative in what we do when we travel. We kind of go a little bit out of our comfort zone and, a little bit out of our box. So I'm hoping that maybe something similar will happen. And it's very tangible right away, actually, because we are seeing now, in a different format, because now people cannot meet each other. They cannot go to concerts. They cannot, be very social in a way, but they're doing it online. I've been attending like 15 concerts in the last week or so, just online.
Like virtual concerts.
Exactly. Yeah. With Icelandic musicians. And, there's a lot of like, movements, encouraging people to buy local music and, just support everything that is local, I guess.
So to like draw, like to bridge the gap, I guess you could say, between, 2008 and now, just to kind of speak on weddings in Iceland a little bit. I mean, you could probably point to 2008 as being, the impetus for Iceland becoming this popular destination for weddings. So it was kind of a boom for you, I guess, and for most businesses that were there. And you speak about community, and I'm curious, like what's the response of the local community to Iceland becoming this booming destination for weddings?
I mean, I think the carrying capacity of a small society is always a little bit sensitive in a way that, both socially and environmentally. And of course, what has been the downside of tourism, if you start with that, is obviously just, the amount of people coming here and to certain areas. And that's something that, authorities need to handle in a way, not only the companies, but also the authorities. And it is, I think it's maybe, I would say 10 years ago that we started to really realize that tourism is an actual solid industry. Because until, I mean, when I was starting in tourism, I had a feeling that I was starting to work in a hobby. Like, you know, that was not my job. It was more than my hobby to be a host or something. And that was the case for a lot of, you know, travel agents and just tour operators. Because, I mean, you have to think about, we have this island that is so, is filled with natural beauty. And, you know, as Icelanders, we have been used to just traveling around without any, you know, asking anyone of permission for it. It's just a very free country in that way. But suddenly we had an overflow of tourists coming, and then suddenly you had, you know, local people getting a little bit frustrated by people, you know, too much people coming, basically. And that's when we had to think about putting up some limitations. But I think overall, I mean, maybe because I work in tourism, I tend to see the positive side of it. But I mean, I think the overall view of Icelanders now is that tourism is basically, I mean, it was our savior in a way, you know, after the crisis. And also after, I mean, you cannot forget when Eyjafjallajökull, the glacier, like the volcano under the glacier erupted. I mean, half of the world stopped, basically. I mean, you know, I had friends in Brazil that couldn't go home. And
that was in 2011, right?
I think it was in 10, yeah. Yeah,
it was around there because I remember having a wedding nearby. It was our first wedding in Iceland. And instead of Jökulsárlón being this beautiful blue, you know, glacier, it was covered in black.
Black. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, we actually have a few really great stories where we had couples that actually were stuck in Iceland. And they were just hanging out at a local bar or something, you know, and they fell in love, and then they got married with Pink Iceland when they, you know, a few years later. Yeah. So we have a few couples like that, actually. So, you know, there's always a bright side to everything, I guess. Yeah. But I think, I mean, tourism here obviously has played a big, big role in just, you know, putting us on the map again, you know, as a country in a way.
Was it late last year when WOW Air shut down? That had a pretty big effect, I guess, on tourism as well. And you know, the byproduct of that, I guess, is fewer destination weddings. So it seems like between that happening and what's happening now, like, what's your vibe? What's your feeling?
Well, I mean, my vibe is still positive in a way that I think we are going through a couple of months, maybe 3-4 months now that are going to be tough. I mean, basically, we cannot welcome people here because there is, you know, pretty much an international travel ban going on. So even if, I mean, I'm not so worried about locally. I think we will recover from this fairly quickly here in Iceland with a small population. And I mean, our healthcare system is handling it very well. And so is the, you know, the government on the business side as well. So, I mean, there are a lot of, for example, for us as a company, it's crucial to have some help during these months of, you know, no income, basically. And just recently, just now in mid-March, the government is basically offering up to 75% of salaries, which is, I mean, it's fantastic. Of course, it's not going to save us, you know, in a way, but it's going to help us over a few months. And there are a few other, I mean, there is like a child benefit payment and, you know, all these things that are helping people go through these difficult months, I guess.
And yes, the Nordic nations, they take care of you. I mean, what you're saying sounds pretty similar to what's happening here in Sweden, for sure.
Yeah. Now suddenly people are not complaining so much about high taxes, I guess. It's like, oh, that's what they're for.
So to kind of like reel it in a little bit here, like maybe a wedding photographer in Copenhagen is listening to this and being like, why am I listening to this person? But one of the things I wanted to like speak with you about is like, you're a very experienced wedding professional. You've been in the game for a while and you've done a ton of weddings, and you're dealing with, you know, kind of crisis management right now with all your clients. So what are some like takeaways that you're already learning in dealing with this huge wave of cancellations and rescheduling and couples in kind of a panic? Because I think there's a lot of things that wedding photographers can, you know, do themselves, mm-hmm. and, you know, take ideas from.
Yeah. I think maybe number one is to be completely honest with your couples. And that goes a long way, I guess, because, you know, the thing is we don't really know what's going to happen in 2 months or 3 months or 4 months.
Okay, but if you don't mind, can I jump in?
Yeah.
Like with that comment, I mean, how flexible can you actually be? And what I mean is, like, do you like have any urge to sort of be hard about it, or is it pure flexibility? Because at the end of the day, I mean, a lot of people have probably paid you deposits and maybe they're asking for it back. So, so I don't mean to cut you off, but I'm curious, like how much of a hard ass do you be about it versus, you know, just a human being about it?
Yeah. I mean, I guess, obviously we that's kind of like our business model is actually to be very, very, flexible and very human, but we also have to, you know, keep our staff employed and, you know, make the company live. And, so what our focus number one is basically to postpone and not to cancel, because what happened right away, I woke up at 3 a.m. in the night when the news came from the U.S. what was happening there. And because 85% of our guests are actually coming from the U.S., obviously we were very concerned. And the first thing we did that morning was just to send an email to everyone and tell them, like, we know what's going on. And, you know, well, we heard the news. And just so you know, we are here for you. And what we did, we basically started the strategy of just talking to all the vendors, to all our collaborators and everything, just to kind of get them on board of, you know, postponing and not canceling, and just kind of saying to them, okay, can you keep the same prices? Can everyone keep their credit and blah, 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 you know, all these things that are super important for the couple, obviously, and their guests. Everyone was on board. So I think that is like super important that the couple actually know that they, I'm not going to lose their money. So even if they're, we are postponing some of the weddings, you know, a full year so that's going to happen in some cases.
With regards to like the vendors, I mean, photographers obviously and filmmakers listen to this podcast, and I don't want a swarm of photographers knocking on your door because that's not the point here. But what have you noticed in terms of your relationships with photographers and filmmakers that has been positive and negative in this current time? Like what do you like seeing and what have you not liked to see?
I mean, we like seeing that photographers and videographers are flexible as much as we are, because that's going to be, you know, that's going to make it or break it for the couple, I guess. You know, it's the fact is that people are investing a lot, not only money, but also emotionally. And what has happened, you know, in the last few days, I think people are also thinking that suddenly now it's not important to plan a wedding because, you know, all of this is happening outside, you know what I mean? So people feel almost like bad about it. And they're like, I cannot be like planning something so happy when, you know, my neighbors are dying or something. And they tend to be, you know, super emotional about that part. So what we are kind of focusing, and this is something we, you know, we appreciate help from, you know, our collaborators as photographers, to sort of, you know, keep on the focus that, you know, we're going to make this happen. It's just going to be a little bit later. and I think it's also the fact because people realize that we're all in this. It's just not one type of business that is actually harmed. Is everyone, basically. So I guess that's the human part that comes in there.
Yeah, maybe it's an obvious answer, but I don't think you can act any other way than empathetic at the moment.
That's the thing. Yeah, exactly.
How are you, like, you have a pretty large team there, right? Like, I guess about 10 employees that you...
Yeah, we are now 8 here, the kind of like fully employed. And then we have a lot of contractors, obviously, for each event. And
And it's you running the company with your now wife, I guess. And there's one more person, if I...
Yeah. Hannes.
So as a business owner and the boss, I mean, this must be a pretty new and interesting experience for you dealing with your employees. Like, what are some things that you've learned so far, like in crisis management with employees?
to keep them calm. It's kind of like the basic thing, I guess. I think it comes very handy that we are actually planners, because we, like you said, you know, before, we are dealing with, you know, crises all the time, but usually they're just behind the scene, like, you know, behind the scene a little bit, and nobody knows about it except us. This time everyone knows about it, you know, so that's kind of a little bit more of a challenge, and everyone is sort of freaking out. So even if we keep, you know, a calm front, you know, everyone is freaking out anyway, but I think, I mean, the, what is important here is again, to obviously be honest about the situation, and I mean, we don't know how to do this in a way. I mean, we have never in our human life, we have never experienced anything like this exactly. So I guess we are all learning how to deal with this.
How far ahead are you looking? And I'm asking just like from like a strategic mm-hmm. point of view, like how far ahead are you planning right now? Are you kind of thinking, and I know you don't have the answer because nobody does, yeah. but like in your best case scenario, like what are you planning for?
So our strategy is basically, we are thinking now until June 1st, kind of like nothing will happen until June 1st. Like that's sort of, we've just taken all the events, all the tours, all the weddings that were supposed to be happening until then. And we just postponed them right away. Because I think no matter, even if Iceland will have been, is open by the time, I am sure that not, you know, other countries will be.
And if you don't mind, could I just jump in there too? Like, are you looking at this at all as an opportunity? And I ask that, you know, and of course, there's nothing positive to come out of a health crisis. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not being strange here. But, you know, through the negatives, there's going to be a lot of positives that come out from it. Are you looking at it like an opportunity at all, maybe to like grow your team? Because you're going to be kind of inundated probably with a lot more work.
Yeah, that's sort of our challenge now, because we are postponing so many weddings. I mean, we're already postponing over 30 weddings now. And that means that we will be very busy, you know, in when it then comes, you know, the high season. Because obviously the summer here in Iceland is already our high season, and we already have a lot of weddings planned by then. So yes, I mean, I think there are opportunities in all situations in a way. Again, the positive Pollyanna here, and but I think we will be even like adding new services to our, you know, for our guests. For example, I had in mind, for example, now to do like a live stream you know, thing during the ceremonies, for example. I mean, we've done it in the past, just kind of put one uncle on Skype or something, you know, just something like simple like that. But I'm thinking like more advanced in a way, like you could actually just get a videographer to be there and you know, record the whole thing and just have a live feed from your wedding. So even if you don't, you know, if you have a small group with you, you know, you could have like 300 people back home in Arizona or something, you know, watching.
Yeah.
So that was already like, there you have a new product that we have never really thought about before.
Yeah, that's you just kind of like sparked a couple ideas in my head. It was like, like Airbnb came from 2008, and all these awesome things came from 2008. Exactly. So maybe this next wave of awesome stuff is just around the corner.
I'm sure of it, actually.
Well, look, I don't want to take too much of your time. I wanted to just kind of poke your brain a little bit and kind of, I don't know, it's interesting for me. I'm just selfishly interested in what planners are doing, because I feel like they're kind of like, you know, the right agents to work with if you want to have a prosperous mm-hmm. career as a wedding photographer or a wedding filmmaker. So a few little ideas from you is kind of what we were going for here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think in a way we look at ourselves a little bit like the glue in the whole thing. You know, it's we're connecting all these different collaborators together. And I mean, we just had a wedding the other day where we basically had 45 people, like, you know, independent people, workers working with us on that day. And it's such a, like, there's so, I don't know, there's so much that happens in one day for so many people and so many families, you know what I mean? So I think that's something, and even like here in Iceland, when we talk about numbers in tourism, I'm sure that they don't think about photographers. They don't think about the florists. They don't think about, I mean, because the wedding industry in Iceland is almost non-existent, to be honest, like on a local level.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, and that could be also an opportunity in a way. I mean, we've not even touched the local market, to be honest. I mean, we've not seeked to do that. And so we just have destination weddings in Iceland for people from abroad, and vice versa. Actually, we're starting to go with Icelanders abroad.
Interesting. But you just can't work together in the same, in your home city.
No, exactly. So that's kind of, I don't know. It's just like a culture thing as well. And that's, I guess, why we also have a lot of Americans, is because they are just used to the culture of, you know, a wedding industry. While the, you know, the Icelanders and people from Scandinavia, for example, they're just used to do this on their own and, you know, and their families. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay. Now another idea came to my head, so I can't let you go quite yet. Generally speaking, and not purely from like an Icelandic point of view, but like in general, I feel like most photographers are curious how to properly approach a planner. They want to establish a relationship, but oftentimes, you know, if you're coming out, if it's a cold email or a cold call, you'll come in too hot and you'll like burn the bridge before you even start a relationship. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure you've probably had a lot of people kind of approach you, and you've probably seen a lot of people try to work with you who are coming out of the blue. What approaches do you encourage people to consider when they're trying to start a relationship with a planner?
We do get approached by photographers usually like once a week at least. So we have a very long list of, we have an Excel list of people that have actually contacted us, and we rate them. No, I'm joking. the first thing is obviously the content. I mean, you know, if you put a link to your portfolio or website or whatever it is, if it is good content, obviously that sells us, you know, your services. Second is like, the sooner we get prices, the better it is, because we are sort of like, you know, the middleman between the couple and then the photographer and everyone else. So like for, you know, we are maybe talking to like 200 vendors, and it's so important to get just pricing right away, because that's what, you know, the couple waits for. And just kind of like a description of the packages maybe. And I mean, I've always felt that it's always better to get like an all-inclusive package in a way that, so you just know the end, what the end cost is going to be. So you don't have to add like, oh yeah, then we had to travel the car, blah, blah, you know, this travel cost and also. Diversity is a bit of a, you know, it's something we care a lot about, but we are always like trying to do more of. The fact is that most of our guests are actually like, now even if we have a LGBT focus on our company, we have more straight weddings now. Just numbers. I mean, we are a minority.
I guess we didn't really preface like we kind of just jumped into the talk and didn't really preface it that is kind of like how Pink Iceland began. But now you've evolved and, you know, like,
I mean, that will never change. I mean, we founded this company out of passion to do something more for the LGBT people coming to Iceland, because there was nothing done at the time. We were already doing it as just nice people, you know, to kind of help out whenever, you know, I don't know, a gay reporter would come, you know, the tourism board would actually just call me like, hey, what should I do with him? And, you know, and then I ended up, you know, going and have a beer with them or something like that. But
just out of curiosity, like, how did you get kind of like connected or lassoed into that role? Like, how did that happen for you?
Well, I mean, I was very involved in the LGBT movement here. I was the president of Reykjavik Pride for 7 years. So basically, we managed the biggest festival of Iceland. So that was
quite... in a tiny city like Reykjavik, it was easy to stand out.
Exactly.
You know, after doing those jobs. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, So my network was really around that. And so it was fairly, it sort of made sense for us when we started to use that network, obviously. And the privilege is to, because we are so focused on our target audience that we did not do any, if you may say, traditional marketing, because we just aimed for, you know, our target audience directly. And then the rest came with it. And like we say today, you know, our reputation is our marketing, basically. And yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, you're kind of a unbelievable example of evolving out of your core target market into just the, you know, a, I guess a broader market just through good service. Mm-hmm. Like that's hard to do.
And we still keep our, like, because our policies are very, very clear. And I think that is also something that attracts like people to us, because we basically, like, on our front page, on our website and on our door, when you come to the office, it says pretty much like, you know, as long as you're not queerphobic, sexist, or racist, don't come in, you know, and all these things. And so you're very, very, you know whom you're dealing with, basically. So if you don't agree with that type of, you know, policy in a way, you don't really contact us. And that's the great. So we joke about this, but it's dead serious, actually, that we have an asshole filter.
It's, you can just feel it right away.
Yeah. It's just kind of like, you know, you don't reach out if you don't, you know, accept us for who we are, basically, and vice versa. So,
all right. So if anyone's made it this far, 30 minutes, and they still have no idea who you are, I hope they go and search for you online. Where should they start?
You can just put in Pink Iceland, whatever, and you will find us basically on Instagram or pinkiceland.is as a website, or Facebook, or whatever you fancy.
So next time, when the apocalypse ends, we should do another podcast where you talk about branding, because I think that I could probably speak to you for a long time about that, because you've done it so brilliantly with Pink Iceland.
Thank you. That would be my
pleasure.
But
for today, let's cut it off, because I said 30 minutes and we're just about a minute over.
That's quite good.
But thank you very much for doing this. And we will talk again in brighter times. I guess it's not that dark and dreary. I mean,
not yet.
It's as positive as you want to make it.
That's the thing. Yeah.
All right. Perfect. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you too. Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.